Welcome everyone to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. This is episode number 70. Already at number 70, almost a year into this. Maybe a little more than a year into this. And I have a repeat offender joining me here on this particular podcast and who I really enjoyed having on earlier in this fall. And that's one Zach Betts. Betts, welcome to the show. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me on once again, Matt.
Well, today, one of the things that I wanted to have you on about is that I had asked you earlier in the week about the Air Raid and the Arizona Cardinals, and I thought it'd be fun to bring you on to talk about both because you are such a student of the game and you spend so much time, you know, really looking at the X's and O's of the game and really getting linked into a variety of different coaches' groups and attending coaching clinics and just doing a lot of study, and you're a terrific resource on Twitter when it comes to really learning about the ins and outs of the strategic parts of the game. So, you know, just to kind of bring it, you know, just to start really kind of from the point that I think everyone wants to know who's a casual fan but wants to learn more about the game is when it comes to the Arizona Cardinals, I mean, is tell us about why that you think this will or won't work this year in terms of the Air Raid, and are they making a bigger deal out of the fact that Kingsbury's bringing his collegiate version of the scheme to the NFL? Is that a bigger deal than they're making it?
I'm super excited that Cliff's actually coming to the NFL. I think he's one of the most innovative guys right now at the college level. He's throwing out quads a lot. He's throwing out like nub formations, which is trips to the left or right, and then a tight end in line. It's a tough formation to defend. he's great at game planning. He will game plan his ass off. I think he's one of the best in the world at it, really. And he still sticks true to his Air Raid roots, like regardless of what they call. He's still running, you know, mesh and Y-cross. And I think he understands how to maximize who he has on the field at all times. That's one thing I'm also excited for. So, like, for you fantasy guys, I wasn't as big a fan of Hakeem Butler, but in that kind of offense, I think he will find a way to scheme him open. Or, you know, if he does struggle with press, or if anybody struggles with press, I do find – that he will find a way to get them yards and score points. And I'm excited. I can't wait to see what he throws out there.
Okay. So when we talk about the Air Raid as a concept, I mean, what I've always heard, you know, was, and when I look at it, it's, you know, it's talked about as it's a highly distilled version of the West Coast offense. And we talked about this, you know, at the last podcast, you know, about that, and that it's been around for a while. And it's been around in the NFL. I mean, you talk about Y-cross. Everybody uses Y-cross. You know, everybody uses mesh. So what makes it schematically a little different? Is it some of the formations you just talked about in the opening here? Are there going to be the line splits going to be different in terms of what Kingsbury's going to bring? Is that going to be something that's going to be new to see whether that works or not? I mean, you know, because I hear people talk about line splits and say, well, it's not going to work the way it did in the Big 12. You know, can you either confirm that or just dispel that whole idea?
Yeah, I mean, so there is Air Raid offense, I guess. I would call an Air Raid offense like the traditional Mike Leach or Hal Mumme. They're still running a traditional Air Raid. They're running the base concepts out of, you know, I mean, Leach only has five formations he runs everything out of. And then we have these branch offs. So all these, you know, guys under his coaching tree or whatever, I would consider them Air Raid in philosophy. I mean, they want to throw the ball. There's a ton of guys who consider themselves Air Raid. Phil Longo at UNC, formerly Ole Miss, he really considers himself Air Raid. But if you look at his stuff, he put out an article on XNO Lab, and it's a great resource if you really want to get into like the scheme stuff. But I mean, it's basically run and shoot stuff. I know your followers probably watched DK Metcalf and complained he only ran, goes and stops, but that's because, I mean, it's basically a run and shoot system where if you're even, you're leaving, and if you can't, then you just convert the route. So you have those two different types, right? So you have philosophy and offense. And Cliff, I mean, everybody carries the concepts, like you said, it's just an optimized West Coast offense. They can tag anything still. They still do it all. But Cliff just throws like the millennial version of it out there. Him and Lincoln Riley, I mean, they still run the base plays, but I mean, like I said, they will game plan their ass off. They'll target specific players and just throw out some wild stuff. Cliff actually stole a 2-point play from Sean Payton like 2 years ago. After the game, they're like, "Where'd you get that from?" He's like, "Oh, I stole it from the NFL." Like he watches, he studies, he takes everything. And so I was looking at the draft and what he's trying to do. I just go back to when he started at Texas Tech. When he started there in 14 and 15, I mean, he had three NFL quarterbacks on there at the same time, right? And that was when I first started getting into the football stuff, and I was like, wow, I mean, they really love to throw it, and he's four or five wide. And then you look at 16, obviously the Patrick Mahomes year, right?
Right.
And I think this is, if you really want to study Cliff, I think this is like what he wishes he could have every offense be. I think it's why he came to the NFL. I think it's why he drafted Kyler. And if you look at that year, he was running five wide like 80% of the time. And five wide is great, but pass pro gets a little, you can manipulate the pass pro pretty easily. You can send fire zone blitzes, simulated pressures. You can really mess with the offensive line. The only thing is, I mean, you have Patrick Mahomes, and he can make any play out of structure. And this is one thing I'll give Cliff credit for. A lot of offensive coordinators want to play 10 on 11, right? They want to win on the whiteboard. They want their quarterback to make a pre-snap, post-snap decision, win on the whiteboard. Let's get 5 yards and go. All if you look at defensive guys, they like that. They want to play 10 on 11. You're down one man.
Yeah.
And I think in Cliff, I mean, obviously this is just me projecting my thoughts, but I think he wants to play 11 on 11. You go five wide with a playmaker like that. If something wrong happens, well, you just play out of structure and it's a 20 yard gain. Sorry. So I think like if you guys want to go back and study, look at the five wide stuff and just see like what he does with a playmaker at quarterback. It's interesting. It's one of the only offensive coordinators I've ever seen who's willing to let their guy make plays. Like the whiteboard is cool, but I mean, 60% of the plays are probably out of structure.
Yeah.
So that's cool. And then, I mean, I don't think he's, I know he's not married to the five wide stuff, because then you go to 17 and 18. 17, he had Nick Schimonek, and I mean, he sniffed the NFL, but he wasn't good. He was not a good quarterback. And I remember the first game of the season, I think they were playing Houston or something. They came out in 20 personnel, two running backs, and they ran power and counter like 20, 30 times. I was like, wow, like he adjusts to what he has. He's not married to one single thing. Obviously, they still ran, Y cross and mesh and all that stuff. But he's going to run it with whatever he's got, and he's not going to. The system thing is overblown, especially for Cliff, because he's going to adapt. And I think the biggest way I can explain it was this year, he had two or three quarterbacks go down in the same game. I think one was already injured and two went down the same game. They're on their fourth quarterback. I don't know his name. His name was number seven. That's what it But he was mainly a runner. He didn't really throw the ball much. And as soon as he came in, they're running guard tackle, counter read stuff. They're running speed option. They're throwing RPOs. I mean, it's an extended triple option, right?
Yeah.
And that impressed me so much, I think, because he wants to throw the ball, right? But this guy comes in. They had obviously been practicing the read stuff. They had obviously been practicing, all these RPOs. He's ready. Like he does have faults, and we'll get to that later. But like offensively, I really do think he's, automatically he might be top five in the NFL. But that's, just from what I've seen before.
So really what we're talking about here is, obviously someone who's not afraid to be flexible to their personnel on the field, as you just mentioned. And then the whole five wide thing's very interesting to me because you often hear commentators say this, and they'll sit there and seem like they're ultra impressed and make that out to the quarterback and say, well, the coach must really trust him to go five wide. And, when I always hear them talk about this, and I think, is this merely a product of just the coaches' egos who don't want to let their players play and that they don't want their players to play off script because everything has to be, they have to be like the controller and basically the quarterback is that narcissistic extension of them. And the playbook has to be that, and they're just afraid to let players play. Is that
Oh,
basically it?
I mean, in my opinion, yes. I mean, when you go five wide, it's backyard football, right? I
Yeah.
mean, one thing breaks loose and it just turns out it's automatically turns into a out of structure play. But it's also, I do think it has to do a lot with talent. I mean, you watch the Chiefs, right? And they just had overwhelming offensive talent and they were just killing people out of five wide this last year. So I think five wide is kind of the same as like 22 personnel, where if you have the talent, like you will just smash people. It doesn't really matter.
It's one extreme or the other, basically, because when you go one extreme or the other, you're either going to rule or you're going to get decimated if you don't have the talent because you're going all in. So let's talk about a little bit of that talent. I mean, when I watched, certainly watched that offensive line in Arizona the past few years, and it seemed like when they were healthy, I used to hear people talk, oh, Adrian Peterson, he's done. And then, but you're thinking, well, the offensive lines he's played on weren't very good, and when they were healthy and they acquired him, he looked good for a couple of games until half of their offensive line went down again, and then that was pretty much it for him and anybody else in terms of really being efficient. But with this in mind, I mean, I guess the thought, you just look at it and it's obvious that the thought is, well, Kyler Murray's going to be a far more mobile than Josh Rosen is. So if our offensive line isn't great and we go five wide, he's going to get rid of the ball fast or he's going to get downfield fast. And we can mitigate some of the issues with our offensive line right now. So, is there anything that we need to watch out for in terms of specific play along that offensive line that will either be, a good sign or a canary in the coal mine when we, around the preseason?
Well, I'm not going to lie. I practiced some self-care these past couple of years, and I have not watched a single snap of Arizona Cardinal football. I don't know what the offensive line looks like, but I can comment on what I've seen in the past. I never thought, offensive line at Texas Tech was a liability for them. He struggled to recruit. He never really had, tier one players, but you also never saw it as a liability, which is probably on film, that's probably the biggest compliment. Obviously, everything breaks down a couple times a game.
Sure.
The defense is going to win, but if you can mitigate that as much as possible, and I do think he understands that pass pro is the foundation of the passing game. I honestly don't know that much about pass pro, which is funny considering, I mean, that's probably 75% of the play, right?
Sure, but that's
but
okay.
yeah, no, but I mean, they pick up some nasty stuff, especially in the Big 12. So in the SEC, right, you have your standard, cover one, press man. You get your traditional blitzes, but in the Big 12, like schematically, they're doing some crazy stuff. They're throwing out some crazy blitzes. Like if you really want to see the evolution of Scheme at warp speed, like watch the Big 12. They're doing some crazy cool stuff. And I mean,
TCU's
I
been
mean,
on the front line forever with a lot of what they do with Patterson and
yeah, I
after.
mean, and they'll pick up some nasty stuff that I'm like, wow, okay. You know, they picked up this blitz, and it was never a liability, even in college with the subpar talent. So I do think, even at the NFL level, I think he understands that you need to have the fundamentals on the offensive line and pretty consistent, you know, pass pro calls and stuff. So I wouldn't be too worried about that, especially with Kyler, because I mean he's one of the most special players I think personally I've ever seen. Like his spatial awareness in the pocket is unparalleled. He's just crazy in the pocket. So
So tell me about then some of these other players that they drafted in terms of how they'll fit in. I mean, I think the first guy that comes to mind is Andy Isabella. You know, he certainly has the speed to win outside if he can get free. And then you also have people talking about him as being a Cliff Kingsbury slot receiver in terms of being a perfect fit for that. Why is what are they looking for out of a slot receiver? And is he that best fit? Or what about Christian Kirk, who was a slot receiver at A&M, and then you have Fitzgerald, who's aged and seems to be evolved into a big slot receiver. And then of course we have Butler, who also operated out of the slot a bit too. But you know, who's going to play outside and who's going to be inside and why?
I was impressed with Isabella's ability to get off press. I really don't think he's going to be an inside guy. And yeah, I mean the NFL is shifting to these smaller guys outside too. It's kind of a weird paradigm recently. It's odd to see just these small wide receivers getting shots very early in their careers. And I mean they've all excelled, obviously, because that's the reason for the shift. But I really do think he'll probably be their X or their Z, you know, the guy on the line of scrimmage that needs to beat press. And then, yeah, that's interesting. They do have a lot of slot wide receivers. Wow. Christian Kirk, I'm sure, you know, I don't think people give credit to wide receivers enough for their. I think the first year is hard for them. I mean,
Yeah.
how many dudes see press in college?
Not much.
You might see one rep a game, like, and over the course of, unless you're in the SEC, but like, yeah, it'll be tough, especially with so many rookies, to see how they adjust. Like, if I was a defensive coordinator, I would just, you know, play press man and see what they have, you know, and game plan from there. But so Kirk going into his second year, I liked him from the little bit I saw. He should probably be on the line of scrimmage too. I'm sure he could beat press pretty well and just throw and just mix and match the other guys, right? I mean, Larry at this point, what is he like? Basically an H back, like he's throwing these crazy blocks and stuff too. So
Yeah.
and Butler, I mean, regardless of what I think. I mean, he's a physical specimen, and you can really, if he picks up the game quickly, we should be very afraid for the league because he's, I mean, 6'6", 240 or whatever he is. Like, I feel like Cliff would find some way to give him targets. So.
Yeah, because see, I'm thinking when I look at this, I think while I can understand that people being impressed with Isabella getting off the lines, the minor concerns I have with him is that I worry about him being able to work downhill as he attacks. Like it was interesting to me that Penny Hart didn't get drafted, but Andy Isabella did. Because when I looked at those two, when you see those two guys side by side, it seemed to me that Hart was attacking downhill all the time and putting guys on their heels and still being able to avoid contact and or deal with contact and turn it around on them. Whereas with Isabella, I was more concerned. I kind of joked around and called him Dance Fever because I felt like that he was too lateral in his movements right now and kind of tried to wait for the defender to get off balance and avoid contact, which could cause him not being as efficient with his stems and his releases to where he wasn't getting to his target on time, or he got jostled a little bit and rerouted, then he got distracted. But this, at the same time, you know, obviously he is a very good football player, and I think I can see how he would be an X at some point, or maybe even start off as a Z, because they could at least keep him off the line of scrimmage, kind of like what the Cardinals and the Florida State Seminoles did with Kelvin Benjamin in his career, you know, at first, which is kind of like, yeah, you're on the line and outside, but we're not going to let you get pressed. And so I could see him being in that position, but then that means that either Kirk or Fitzgerald will have to oftentimes play in that X role, which isn't really like ideal, you know, until Butler actually learns, you know, to really refine his skills. Cause if he can refine his skills, he could be an X easily. You know, and even then they might still just give it a shot and say, let's see if we can, you know, do that. But I can see how, what they might do with this is like you said, mix and match Fitzgerald and Butler inside out a lot. And then same thing with kind of Isabella and Kirk, you know, in terms of their roles, because they could be a little interchangeable in terms of what they do, maybe, you know, different ways, kind of have your small slot outside guys and your big slot outside guys, and you mix and match based on what the defensive look gives you and what you're trying to do with that. But I mean, is there something special about the slot role in the scheme that's different than than other ones that really sets it apart at all to you at all?
I mean, not really, especially because Cliff is willing to like mix and match his guys. Like if you're talking about like a Mike Leach, he's actually going to put his best guys at still X and Z, because I mean, those are the routes that matter, right?
Yeah.
I mean, anybody can really run, you know, a climb route in Y cross. you know, you want your difference makers and difference maker spots. But I was impressed with his receivers at Texas Tech too. I mean, they had quite a few draft eligible guys and they were always well coached, and that's pretty rare, especially at the wide receiver position, when you get like a well coached position like that, especially in college. So I don't know if that'll carry over. I don't know if he got to carry, you know, his wide receiver coach with him to Arizona at all, but I think the fundamentals were always there. So we'll see.
Okay. So how about, I guess, how about the run game? You know, when you think about with Johnson, do you think this is going to help him improve this year based on last year? I know you haven't watched Cardinals football, but, you know, certainly he went from being an elite producer to really being a guy who was, you know, he was still decent. I mean, he's still a good player. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, he certainly struggled in last year's scheme because you didn't have teams, defenses certainly could compensate knowing that the Cardinals couldn't really throw the ball or protect its passer long enough for him to be able to throw the ball. So, you know, how much better do you think Murray helps him? Is it because of his legs and the threat of the option that are going to be a big deal, but how much of also his passing is going to make, you know, this an improvement? Or is it really that if Josh Rosen were in this offense, that David Johnson would still be good, but maybe Kyler Murray makes it better because Kyler Murray can run?
Yeah, so I think the first thing, looking at the construction of the roster and who they have, like they want to go 10 personnel. They want to spread it out. And I think, you know, based off, you know, all these analytics studies and stuff, I mean, the less defenders in the box you have, the more productive you are, right? See, when you have five guys and each of them has a 95% chance of making that block, it's still like 78% of that being like a successful running play, right? That's an absurdly high amount, 95%. So the when you have less defenders in the box, you're going to be more productive. And then, I mean, I mean, Johnson's basically a wide receiver, right? I mean, I haven't watched in a while, but he's crazy good.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they'll unlock that element too.
Another
And
slot receiver.
yeah.
Or he'll be the F, I guess. I
Yeah.
don't know. Sorry.
No. Yeah. And then yeah, with the Murray stuff, that's actually a good question. He doesn't like to do a lot of read stuff between the 20s, but as soon as they get inside the red zone, they're running like speed option and read stuff because, right, you need to score. Space is condensed. You no longer, I mean, anybody can move the ball in between the 20s. It's easy. And once you get down there in that condensed space, you need to gain back that, plus one. Yeah, like I said earlier, you don't want to play 10 on 11. You want to play 11 on 11. And that added element of Kyler plus him, running speed option, running some type of zone read arc, guard tackle counter read, whatever they're going to run. I think he's going to feast down there in the red zone because, I mean, he's got two crazy playmakers who will have the quarterback or the running back usually touches it every play. So that'll be, and that talent is crazy. And you can mitigate some of the deficiencies on the offensive line by reading guys or, conflicting the nickel on an RPO or a second level defender or whatever. If you know what you're doing and you're open to that added risk, but the added reward.
Yeah, and it's funny because the more we discuss this, the more in my mind that I think a lot of us are probably rooting for the Cardinals to do well in this because it would expose the foolishness of the ego-attached coach, in terms of their desire to control so much that they're really sucking the life and spontaneity out of the game that makes these players so good. In the same way that you look at basketball players and you see, at least to a certain extent, and I haven't watched basketball in quite a while, so but from what I would say is, in comparison, there's a lot more life and spontaneity to what can happen in that game, a lot more creativity that results, and I feel like the NFL hasn't really allowed for that in quite some time. So, you talk about the whole the analytics behind it, and I just had Michael Crawford on last week on the show, and we talked about the Ravens, and the Ravens seem to be, directly opposite of what the Cardinals are doing, and that fits maybe that extreme of saying, all right, well, they're going to go one extreme, we're going to go the other. Do you have any thoughts about, the success of that, especially if they're staying in the box, and really kind of like, basically condensing that box to a level where it's like, okay, we're gonna keep everything, inside the hashes here, at least it seems like to an extent.
So you get 60 plays in a game, right? Like if you're lucky, you get like 64, and you can already throw out, 10 of those due to like game situation, end of the half, Hail Marys, end of the game. So you're looking at like 50 plays, and obviously, I think you need more talent to run those heavier formations. You need to execute more. But at the end of the day, I kind of don't think it matters at this point. You just, it's all about talent and execution. If you have both of those, it really doesn't matter what you run. That's kind of where I'm at right now. I go back and forth, and everybody's like, spread football, yes, like this is what we need. But the moment you trot out, all these small defenders, well, the first guy to go, 21 and just run powers is going to take over the league. So you need you need both sides. I don't really, the Ravens could be successful if they had more talent. That's just, I guess that's my opinion.
And I'm with you. I mean, I actually look at this and I think it is. It's about ultimately, it always is about the talent of the players and how well they execute as opposed to just the scheme. And it feels like that's why I kind of, and that's why I've enjoyed having you on and enjoyed talking about this because so many people who don't study scheme, so many people who don't really study players, but they study commentators and try and figure out how they can talk like them and phrase things like them and create hot takes like them, they're always looking for a magic pill or magic formula to everything. And I think that the more you study the game, the more you realize that there's room for all sorts of ways to do things. And maybe it's about the division you're in and how many teams you play each year and what they're about and what you want to counter with, or what you have on your roster and what's the easiest direction to build. That may be part of it. There might also be, how quickly can I win with this incompetent situation that I've arrived into, and I know I only have a couple of years before I'm going to be the one with the target on my back and everyone, you know, basically, you know, politicizing me out of my job. So it's a, you know, it's a crazy situation from that standpoint, but I think that you did a great job of, you know, just kind of clearing up in a very simple way of, you know, this scheme's been around a while. It's, you know, you're just going to get a more creative coach who's going to be willing to use his players, and that spells good things. And, you know, I would love to know from you, as you alluded to, what are the things that you think are the weaknesses of Kingsbury's game as a coach, and how do you think that, you know, how's that going to impact the Cardinals this year and maybe next?
I mean, we look at offensively, and I think he's great. But then you look at, you know, his program at Texas Tech, and I mean, you know, everybody cites the record or whatever. He was 500 or slightly below it or whatever, and that's not the whole story. Like, they struggled to recruit, and Texas Tech actually had some, like, they had some behind the scenes videos of the school in 2018, and they had some Cliff, like, he was waking up at 4 a.m. working out. He was doing all he could to try to turn this program around, I think, because he knew it was his last year regardless of what happened, and he just didn't do it. And I think that comes down to being a head coach, as much as you love to game plan, right? Like, game planning is probably the best thing about being a coach, but as an offensive coordinator, that's probably 60% of your job. As a head coach, it's probably 20%. You have 300 other people in the building who need to know what to do, when to do it. There needs to be structure. I mean, we look at Hugh Jackson. I was always impressed with him as an offensive coordinator. Like, I really thought he was throwing out some pretty innovative stuff, and I was excited for the hire in Cleveland. And, I mean, he just didn't have the juice. He didn't know how to, like, structure. You know, you need to have game plan. Then you look at McVay. I mean, he's young, and he comes into that role, and he, I mean, I bet you if you go to their practices, we see Sundays. We don't see Monday through Saturday. It's 82% or whatever it is of the structure matter, when they're eating, you know, when they're watching film, how practice is going. You have to make those 6 days count, and I don't know if Cliff knows how to do that. And everybody cites the defense or whatever, but I think it's the player. I mean, they struggled with undisciplined penalties. They were always near the top in penalties. And I don't know if that'll make it, you know, players are more mature in the NFL, so maybe it won't matter as much. And you know, maybe they'll do their own thing, but if he fails, it won't because of offense. It'll be because he doesn't know how to be a head coach. I mean, that's a rare quality to have. It's not like a knock on the dude, but there's a reason we only have, you know, 3 tenured head coaches or whatever. It's a tough job.
It's an unbelievably tough job. And what you hit upon is so apt to, you know, such a great discussion point, really, because I think about it from this standpoint. I've talked about this before, but it's like, you know, whatever side of the gun issue you stand on, I'm not going to get all political about this. I'm just going to look at it from the standpoint that I have law enforcement in my family, and I've seen the law enforcement training videos, and I've seen some videos where they talk about, you know, training just someone in the general public on using a gun, and and then what it means also to maybe do extensive training on emergency situations. And those emergency situations would be the thing, unfortunate things we've seen around this country over the past 15, 20 years. And when they show simulations of these things, they see, you know, even the most well-trained, you know, public person in public who thinks they're really well trained can't get the gun out of the holster. They don't know how to get themselves in a protective position based on the position of where the shooter is. You know, they have the gun jam, or they misfire the gun, or they shoot somebody who's an innocent bystander. There's all sorts of things that happen, and the police keep saying over and over again, it's because you have to train every day and you have to keep sharp with this stuff every day. And I've always talked about how this extends to quarterbacks, because quarterbacks have to keep sharp with every little thing, because it's like playing an instrument, and you can't let one thing just slide for too long, or it gets sloppy and the precision is gone. And this game is such a precision-oriented game, even when you're improvising, because the techniques that you use as an individual have to be sharp, and you have to be able to transition from one to the other. So then when it comes to the teaching environment that you have to provide so that people can execute that well, it just goes to show you why someone who, you know, like McVay, I mean, he got in the Super Bowl, and how many plays did he run? I mean, you know, people could criticize him and say the reason that they lost that Super Bowl is that he came in, you know, our buddy Eric Stoner, you know, I had him, we were talking, and he was like, listen, he goes, I feel like they lost that game because McVay had the hubris to come in there and think he could just run the same, you know, handful of plays against Belichick without Belichick, you know, even doing anything to change that. But the flip side of that coin is he got to the Super Bowl with basically with a basic set of plays to run with, his best receiver probably not even, you know, there the entire year. I think Cooper Kupp was their best receiver. So you have, or at least the one who has the best rapport with his quarterback. They not really a tight end to speak of, and a running back who was hurt and just being on the field when they could keep him on there as a decoy since the first quarter of the Kansas City game. And you think about that, and the amount of the organization that had to be in place so that they could execute that well week in and week out. Because if you're not organized, players then start to drop off. Because if you've ever been in a workplace where someone's not organized, the minute that happens, no matter how smart the workers are, no matter how mature they might be at home, no matter how much experience they have and skills they have, they see an opening and they're going to take it, because that's human nature. Human nature, if you've ever managed anyone, you know that people are going to test you. They're going to test you and find that opening, because there's some days they just don't feel like doing the work, because work is hard and they don't want to do it. So they're just going to go, well, this guy, he's nice. He's an okay guy. I like him. But you know what? I'm going to see if I can come in 15 minutes late today. I'm going to see if I can come in 20 minutes late today. Man, he didn't say anything about me coming in late. Oh, you know what? That report, the way he wanted format, maybe I don't really feel like doing it. Let's see what happens if I don't do that. And then if he blows up at you, you know, or disciplines you for something that you've done, you know, 30 times that way, and now suddenly does it, now you feel like he's being unfair. And then, you know, you start stoking all of this, and these types of things happen in every workplace. And when you think about coaching, this stuff happens to a T, and especially with guys who are the most mature guys are in their mid-30s, and sometimes they're not all that mature either. And if they've been like they've been a star and enabled and paid a ton of money, someone comes in and tells them, you know, X, Y, and Z, it can be a big deal to them, and they'll test that as well. And if they've had a 15-year career and they think they're going to make the Hall of Fame and probably will, someone comes in there and says, this is how we're going to do it now, Ben Roethlisberger's going to say, you know, he's going to whine, and he's going to carp, and he's going to, maybe I should just retire, you know, and, you know, do that kind of behavior. But he's no different than, you know, your brother, your sister, your aunt, your uncle, or somebody in your family who probably has done that on their job. And then they come home and tell you about, you know, how good they are on their job. And they probably were to an extent under one boss, but now because they didn't like what the boss was telling them to do. They're going to act like a 14-year-old and, you know, do this kind of stuff. So coaching, having to handle that with, like, you know, 70, 80, 90 people, you know, 150 people in a, you know, in a facility, that's way different than a white, you know, drawing up plays on a whiteboard, knowing an offense. So. I know. I kind of just ranted there.
I
know.
I was shaking my head. I mean, I agree. Like, everybody's had that boss who's easy to take advantage of. And is the work ever quality with that boss? No. Like, there needs to be standards. There needs to be accountability. And I mean, we'll see. You know, I don't want to speak bad about, you know, a person I don't know and I think very highly of, but I just question whether, you know, he can do that. So we'll see. I hope he proves me wrong. Like, I want to see him in the NFL for the next, you know, 40 years or whatever and doing what he does best, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's a prove it scenario. And I don't think there's anything wrong to say he's got to prove it. Because he's proven that he's a great offensive mind. That's awesome. Like you said, and he just has to prove that he has to be a coach. He can be a good coach. And that's a much bigger deal. But yeah, it's going to be fascinating. You know, when it comes to this, if you don't mind, I've noticed that you've been doing some work on Patreon. So I thought it'd be great for you to share with folks, you know, what you're doing and how they can support your work. Cause I know there are a lot of people out there, including myself, who admire the work that you're doing and, you know, give you a chance to continue to keep on doing it.
Well, it's just a little aside thing I'm doing and just to, cause I love making cut ups and I went on a rant here earlier about, like, if you really want to learn the game of football, you know, the game of anything, really, repetition is the key. And you can read all the articles you want on, you know, like, also Ted Wynn wrote a Air Raid article. If you guys want to look up concepts, like what they look like, read that. It's an incredible piece. One of the best things I've read this year. So check that out. It's on The Athletic. So check that out if you're interested in, like, the Air Raid. Yeah. So, but if you really, really want, like, you could see a diagram, you know, in one play and say, okay, that's Y cross. But yeah, if you want to get, you know, if you really want to learn, you need to make cut ups or watch cut ups. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do. So right now, like in the off season of last year, I was like, the Rams are doing some cool stuff. I am going to study wide zone and see, like, how they run it, what they do. So basically this past year, I charted every single run they had, and I'm in the process of breaking down as far as I can, you know, their tendencies. I have every wide zone run they have in a cut up with my charting data, and, you know, some analytics that I'm trying to get into just to see, just for fun, basically. It's just a fun little exercise for me, just, you know, branching out there and stuff. But I have it for wide zone and duo, and I'm currently actually working on – so I every year I chart every Washington State play. And so the goal is by June, I will have cut-ups of all their base cons. So they run 15 passing plays, including screens, and then their run game stuff. And so, like, if you really want to get into the Air Raid, I'll have, you know, shallow mesh, H-curl, Y-corner, Y-cross, what else, double smash, all their plays up there. So you can really see, like, the adjustments they make in 3x1, what it looks like in 2x2. It's just the best way to learn. So if you're interested in that, just check it out. It's on my, you know, Twitter. And I'm just trying to you know, it's just a little side thing I'm trying to do and help out everybody. So
that's very cool. That's very cool. You know, it's funny because, as you know, we're doing this on Hangout, but I'm just posting this on, you know, it's just going to be audio only when we do it. But, you know, Beth's here can see my office or what it's going to be at this point, because I'm actually going to have the basement of this house as my office in a couple of years. We're just kind of saving for that and waiting for waiting for the NFL and the CBA to kind of get their act together with that in a year or two or however long it takes. And we don't want to overextend, but so I've taken this bedroom in the house for right now, and I haven't even unpacked my boxes, but this wall behind me, I plan on just doing the whiteboard paint. And for me, like, doing the cut ups is fine, but that's what I'm going to appreciate about your stuff, because I'll get to look at your cut ups and then I'll get to draw it out and just kind of like diagram it and say, okay, that's what this was. This is what this is. And since you've already labeled it and gone through what they face and they do, I can just now write it down and memorize it, you know, and see all the different variations. So that's going to be really helpful for someone like me, because really for over the next few years, what I want to be doing is just basically going through books and going through tape and just memorizing everything I can, having a regimen of like, okay, well, before I turn on my computer today, here's three concepts that I'm going to try and commit to memory. And then let me go back and I'll put them over here and I'll just have a rotation of like 10 or 15 things that I've learned. And hopefully, you know, they'll sink into my mind enough that I can do that. I think I need to take more DHA and whatever the other one is to make sure my and get more sleep. And that will probably help me as well, so that I don't end up getting dementia in the next 15 years and not being able to remember anything. But yeah, that's that's kind of the approach I'm taking with it. So what you're doing is going to be really helpful for anyone who's really just trying to learn and kind of have to make sure they understand. Cause for me, I would worry about, well, am I really seeing this zone play or this variation of it? And do I really notice that that's what it is? So if you're going to show me five variations of outside zone, I know they're all outside zone. That's going to help me immensely, rather than in a book where they only show you one version of it. And you're just kind of like, oh, that's great. And then I'm watching tape and I'm going, what is this? I'm not sure if this is, it looks like it's outside zone. I don't know if it is or not. Now let me just describe it as and then I have to figure out a way to describe the play generically so that I'm not wrong about describing what it is, you know?
No, absolutely. I come in and I'm like, what is this? And the thing about football is too, someone can make a wrong assignment. It could look cool and you'd be like, oh wow, this is a new, you know, scheme. And it was just some guy messing up.
Yes.
That's my favorite thing during clinic season. You know, these coaches come and they show you, you know, the good clips, and the good ones will show you the bad clips too, to show you what not to happen. And one guy, he was up there and he was like, yeah, this guy was not supposed to do that, and he did it, and then we just added it in because I'd never thought of that. You know, the kid did something he was not supposed to do, and it just ended up being like a great blitz call, and he's like, well, we need to do this more. So
that's great. Yeah, that makes total sense. You know, I mean, it's those types of things, because it can be daunting when you're trying to learn the game, and you feel like, you look and you're trying to categorize things, and your mind can get too, it can covet the structure too much, to the point that you get paralyzed with wanting to learn, as opposed to just kind of going, okay, well, you know what? I don't know what this is right now. I'm going to move forward and I'll learn that later. I'll write this down and go, all right, let's figure out that later. But right now, this is what I do know. Here's what I don't know. That's okay. Let's keep going from that perspective. And I think that's the hard thing for a lot of folks, because especially in today's, you know, social media atmosphere, where if you are on and you're trying to learn, you know, you get corrected or banged on for things, you know, that for other people would be daunting. You know, if Dan Orlovsky says to me, no, that's, you know, that's actually cover three, not cover one, because I'm, you know, I missed the way the cornerback shaded the receivers, that's not a big deal to me. I'm not worried about that. But somebody who's maybe a year into this or 6 months into it, if Dan Orlovsky says that, they're going to, you know, some of them may be more like, oh, I don't know anything, you know? And it's like, no, none of us do really. So it's just, you know, we're all students. So that's what I would kind of say to that. But
And I just want to add one last thing. Like, if you are new and you really do want to learn, the concepts or whatever, I would just recommend hyper specializing in one thing, learning it, not mastering it, but I see this, I know what this is. Type it, like if you're going through a game and you want to learn cover three, we'll just skip all the plays that aren't cover three and see, like, okay, this is what happens in this. Or if you want to learn the run game, just watch the run game of one team, and then you can kind of get, they make blocking adjustments to whatever. But don't try to learn by like looking off big plays or whatever, because in big plays something usually went wrong, right? Or
Yeah.
you need to. That's the best way I've learned. I mean, watching. I mean, I've only watched two teams in the past year, like truly, and it's Washington State and the Rams. Like, I really have not watched anything else, and I've learned more in the past year than I have the previous three or whatever. So,
And that's focused. That's what, when you focus on something, that's exactly it. I mean, that makes total sense that one would do that. And then you can move on to the next thing of focus once you've gotten as much out of it as you feel like you can get, without, having Mike Leach sitting next to you, I mean, so, or McVay. But listen, this was fantastic. You can find Betts at All 22 on Twitter. You can definitely find him also as well on his YouTube account. What's that channel again? What's that called?
still all 22. I got lucky with that one,
Sweet. Sweet. So you definitely can find him there. And I appreciate everyone who has been following the RSP cast and liking the work that goes on here in terms of the quality of guests that we've been able to get. We're going to continue to try and do that and match the bar of folks like Betts here and try and provide you stuff that will be informative and educational. And you can follow my work at mattwaldmanrsp.com as well as my YouTube channel, Matt Waldman, or the RSP Film Room. And you can find me at Twitter on at Matt Waldman. Thanks again, everyone, and you guys have a good week.